is too hard. Let's give up.
It's too hard. And we're live now.
Hello, NSA! NSA, you are not looking lovely. You're looking very creepy, and you should probably have a doctor look at that.
Yeah, Baron Barnett on Facebook. Baron, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, Baron.
He goes...
The Minuteman.
He put a post on that says... you know, about how bad the NSA was and all that. And I commented, I said, you know, remember back in the days when we thought the ATF was the worst agency, worst government agency?
Yeah, they're still pretty bad. All those, quote unquote stings that they've got set up.
Yeah.
Well, the time is now 9:02.
Tokyo train sounds. I don't know. I think the NSA is,
it's pretty bad.
Is outdoing.
I'll still vote for the ATF. Because they're just watching me fap. They're not getting mentally challenged children to go and buy drugs for them.
Oh, I saw a thing. Speaking of watching you fap, I saw a thing today.
What?
They're saying there's malware out there that can update the firmware on the camera of your computer.
Yeah, so I saw that.
The light doesn't come on when somebody's using it to see you.
am I on the air?
Yeah, you are.
Yes.
I can hear you. Can you hear us?
What did I just walk into?
Oh.
NSA.
Yeah, we're talking about the NSA.
Oh.
And Fabric.
Bunch of perverts.
Yeah.
Sure are. Oh, and I see Jay in the chat. Jay, I got to say, man. Excellent time to move out of Massachusetts because this winter's gonna suck.
Oh, Jay is already whining about the ice in Virginia. Give me a break.
It doesn't take very long.
No, apparently not.
Jay, my everything hurts. I've been just like shoveling every single. This is like the first evening.
Did you go and hurt your everything?
No, I didn't really hurt my everything. Well, I mean, not all shoveling.
Weird. I want to ask you.
Yes.
Up there, do you have like a rule for shoveling? Because I know that we had a house guest. We had T-Bolt over for Thanksgiving. And it snowed when he was here, but we didn't shovel the driveway because we only got like, 3 inches or so. And it was like, it'll melt eventually. Why shovel? Do you have that up there?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well,
okay.
I'll do the if you get like only an inch, and the weather report says within the next 3 or 4 days it's going to be, you know, well above freezing. Then you just go fuck it.
Yeah,
that's what I did for the first snowfall, which wasn't really all that much, except for this is why I say it's going to be an awful winter. Is we got this little podunk piece of shit nothing snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And it just pretty much just gave us a dusting, except for when we got our first real snowstorm, it was on top of that dusting. That just that little piddly bit of nothing, which never lasts, was sticking around.
It was the appetizer. I'm telling you, glaciers are coming.
Look at Cairo.
Yep.
You know, that freaked me out. That kind of freaked me out, seeing snow on the Sphinx.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's pretty freaky. Yeah. I mean, it's been over a century since they had snow in Egypt.
Yep.
It was snow. It was so cold that the nose of the Sphinx got frostbitten off.
Har har.
I thought that was pretty good.
That was good.
Yep.
Hi, Brita.
Hey.
Music.
Ah.
Hey. It is Thursday, December 19th, 2013, the last episode of the year, episode 85.
Is it the last episode of the year?
Yes. Unless y'all want to do one on the 26th. Which,
I have to work.
Yeah, I don't think anybody
Sorry.
Wants to do
it. Yeah, the library is open until 9 the day after Christmas.
Ugh.
I'm sure we'll be so busy.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, we have a really big show tonight.
We do. I think it's going to be a great show.
We're going to have Sean Sorrentino. And for those of you that don't know who Sean is, and if you don't know, you're, well, stupid.
He's kind of like Johnny Cash, except instead of wearing black, he wears purple.
Yeah.
And he didn't get that reference the first time I said it.
Sean's an interesting guy. He lives in North Carolina. And he is, he's really kind of a anti-gun activist kind of guy. Does
okay.
that make sense?
The best kind of guy.
Yeah.
And he's a blogger. I'm going to put a link to his blog here.
Double negative. Anti-anti.
Yeah, something like that. Copy link.
Yeah.
Paste.
He's an anti-gun hunter.
They could make a reality show.
Yeah, they really could.
Because he also does theater.
That's true.
And I think we have him on the line. Hello, North Carolina. Can you hear me? Oh, shit. Don't tell me it's all screwed up.
Did you hang up on him?
No, he's there. I think I may have. Let me check my.
Oh, Alan.
Oh, God.
Take the battery out and lick it.
Oh, wow. Hang on. I'll get it. I'll get it. Can you hear me now?
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Hey, there we go. I was listening. I could hear you over the radio. I was waiting for you to call me, to talk to me, and then you disappeared.
Yeah, my audio settings were fun. When we're not doing the show, I've been working really hard with this digital audio workstation stuff. My long-term goal is to get the entire production of the show into one computer. Right now it's scattered across three. So anyway,
wow.
The audio sometimes doesn't get put back.
Weird. There's probably more differences between Johnny Cash and me than just that purple shirt.
Well, there's the booze and the pills.
And Sean is still alive. Thing.
And he's not married to a member of the Carter family.
Yeah. Yeah, we could go on for a while about all the differences.
Well, except for all that. welcome to the Score Report again. I think you've called in before. I know you have.
Of course he has.
Yeah.
Getting me to shut up is really the hard part, not getting me to talk.
I wanted to. One of the interesting things about Sean, if you haven't paid any attention to him, is he's, you know, lots of people are bloggers, but he's one of the few people that actually goes out and gets real news to blog about, or actually in some cases creates real news to blog about.
Creates, yeah, that's the point. Sean creates situations, and I really respect you for that, Sean. You know, people, and I'm not. Well, I'm not disparaging the gun blog community, but there are people who just read the news and comment on the news and they're brilliant at it. But there are other people like you that go out and actually do things and create news. And I think as far as gun rights activism, that's kind of more what we need. You know, go out there, do something. Yeah,
I have fun with it. I encourage other people to have fun with it, but it is not easy to start.
No.
It's not the easiest thing in the world to just go out there and say, hey, what do I do now? You have to find somebody who does it and join them and see how it works, and then you develop the ability to, that's how you do it. You know, nobody goes in front of the camera the first time and looks anything other than a fool. I mean, you're just going to have to fail. I'm continually amazed when I end up on camera and I don't look like an idiot.
And you have been on the news. You've been on, not the cable show. You've been on ABC and, real quote, media news.
Well,
stuff.
here's what you got to do. If you are interested in actually moving the needle somehow and getting yourself on the news, forcing the news to carry your message instead of just blindly repeating the garbage that the press release that they received tells them. You got to get your hold of a book called The Ten Commandments of Propaganda by Brian Anse Patrick. You guys know who Brian Anse Patrick is, Dr. Patrick from the University of Toledo. He's a pro-gun guy. He's the guy that wrote the book on why the NRA is successful in the face of horrific press coverage. And he explains how the media does its job. And they're programmed. They're like, in a lot of ways, they're like robots. You know, they are going to do these things. They view the world as they're being. Say that again?
Sorry, I had a noise in my ears.
Okay, they view the world in a certain way. You know, everything has two sides. Well, if you present yourself with the other side, they're going to stick a camera in your face.
Huh? What was the name of that book again? I'm going to put a link to it.
The Ten Commandments of Propaganda. Basically, what you'll find is that the news media doesn't know anything. They themselves, they're not educated people. They go to college, but they don't go to college to actually learn anything. A lot of cases, they go to college to confirm their prejudices. And they're taught, all right, here's the one side. Everything has two sides to it. Go out and bring us something that'll get people to watch our TV. Well, conflict sells, so go out there and be conflict. So that's all I do. I go out there. I stand there. I wave at people. They come over with their camera, and they ask me questions.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll expand on that point. Is I've actually got a relative of mine who's a semi-famous newscaster, and she's now living out in California, and she actually got her news agency to fly her out to Massachusetts for her dad's birthday, so she could interview a cancer specialist at Harvard. And then attend her dad's birthday party, and she was talking about doing this report on this rare form of cancer this girl has, and I went, oh, that's interesting. You know, I used to do cancer research, and so I was asking her a question about the cancer. She knew nothing about it. She knew exactly enough to write the story and to give the sound bites, and then after that, she knew approximately nothing. And I don't fault her for that, but that's exactly what reporters do. Is they're not. You know, they're not experts. I mean, they're like our lawmakers. They know how to make a law. They just don't necessarily know anything of what the law is about or how it's going to work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They know how to write a story.
In the most, since Newtown, there's been three different protest sort of things in this town. There's the MAIG bus came. I ended up, because I'm the only person with street protest experience, I got sort of dragooned into being the cheerleader for the Grassroots North Carolina crew who met them. You know, I was the one saying, okay, these are the cheers we need to use. Because, you know, some things just sound stupid when you try to, well, mostly everything sounds stupid when you chant it. But
sure does.
Some things sound stupider than others. You know? But you do have to follow the rules, right? There's some rules. You know, we got spirit, yes, we do. That doesn't work at a political rally unless you're doing it ironically. But I have experience doing street protests in D.C. with, in a small way, with the Free Republic people there. So the guy that's in charge of I just read a comment. I was never on Duck Dynasty.
You won't be either now.
Yeah, that's true. So I ended up being the protest leader. Well, then we had, what's her face, Gabby Giffords being wheeled through town, and the president of GRNC couldn't make it, so I got put in charge of the protest. Well, that meant that every single news crew that showed up stuck a camera in my face. And it was really interesting. These people really honestly had no idea that there was another side to the story. They reacted to it in that, oh, well, there is another side, so therefore I must cover it. But it had never occurred to them that there was any other way to feel about the situation.
That kind of uses their two sides of the story foundation against them. Because, you know, it kind of forces them to go, oh, two sides, got to cover it.
What was it? They always accused George W. Bush of being intellectually incurious. Hello?
Yeah.
You know. Okay.
Right. But see, when you know everything already, when you know the way the world should be,
should be, what is purpose? Not, yeah.
Hey.
And I got to blow a little bit of smoke up Sean's skirt a little bit with the when you show up on camera. First up, you wear the purple shirt, which is just, I mean, I got to say, I mean, I'm not at all teasing. I am always happy to see when you're rocking the purple, because what they want is they want somebody with, you know, a deep wood Southern accent, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with someone with a deep wood Southern accent whatsoever, but it perpetuates a stereotype. They want somebody who's inarticulate. They want somebody who's going to talk about some bizarro conspiracy theory, chemtrails, iridium flares, you know, awfulness and just not going to tie a sentence together, you know, preferably a few double negatives thrown in there. They want someone without a full mouth of teeth, and I'm from Maine, and there's nothing wrong with not having a full mouth of teeth, but again, perpetuate stereotypes. I mean, you just blow them out of the water just on, you know, sound bites and image alone. And it's just it you're everything that they don't want you to be.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think that I'm one of the better people at conveying all of the issues in a concise way. It's one of the hardest things that I have to deal with is the fact that it's not a debating society. It's not a let's discuss all of the issues and deal with them. You're attempting to try to shove just a little tiny piece through that camera, and you're hoping that they will edit what you said so that the important information that you're trying to get across comes across. That's the hardest thing in dealing with gun rights people. Having been that protest leader, having been the person who's trying to keep control over our side, trying to keep everybody within the bounds of normal human behavior on the street, because, you know, first you get there and you're waving signs, it's a real short step to running wild in the street, right? Somebody sneaks up with a camera and sticks it in the face of one of the other guys there, and he gives them a complete long dissertation on all of the stupidity that is gun control. And every bit of it's right. If the guy had been taking notes, he would have never believed any of the stupid crap that he'd ever been told by anti-gunners ever after that. And the problem was, if he'd have gotten a hostile editor, he'd look like a moron.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out that we hammered that particular guy hard enough that he got mad at the Giffords crowd because he felt he'd been lied to by them. So luckily weren't in a position where he took that dude and edited him to look like a moron. But you have to be extremely careful. You stand in front of the camera and you're like, there's only two, maybe three points that I can make, and you've got to stick to it. You've got to stay with just that. You can't get off into the left field. I felt bad about that one interview for this recent one where he edited me to say simply that if you look at these people, you see the problem is they all have criminal records. Put them in jail. Leave them in jail. Well, the problem is it came off of a discussion of mass shooters who rarely have any criminal records. The mass shooters are crazy people, not street criminals. The average killer is a street criminal with a criminal record, and that's who we had been talking about. So So it's very easy to end up in the wrong side of that. You're talking about one thing, and he just doesn't understand what you're saying, or he doesn't care, or he's deliberately going to edit something in that makes you look stupid.
Yeah, but there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
There can be. There's a lot of that. It really depends on how hostile they are to you.
You almost want to have your own camera run in there just to, you know, record your side of it.
It might be helpful, and that's one of the things that we should really consider is some sort of recording device to record the entire interaction. But so far, and I think I've been really lucky, I've been fairly well treated by all of the people that have interviewed me. The two that I posted, or the two that that interviewed me, can't think of, I think it was the ABC guy. The ABC guy, he seemed, when I talked to him, to not be particularly sympathetic to me. You know, he came across very much like, you know, this is kind of a douche thing. Why are you doing this? But in the end, he was pretty nice about how he handled it. So I was a little bit worried coming off of that one. Plus, I wasn't really warmed up. I kind of warmed up in front of the camera on that one. That's a bad mistake.
So this most recent thing was a result of the Moms Demand Action, which is
right. Moms Demand Action, a wholly owned subsidiary of Michael Bloomberg Incorporated.
Right.
Oh, wait, but now they've officially joined forces with them, so that
forces the same way my big toe joins forces with my foot every time I kick a soccer ball.
Yeah, I think it's funny how it's like, you know, we always say they have to lie because they, you know, but they don't just lie about the facts and stuff like that. They lie about who they are. You know, this woman that's in charge of Moms Demand Action, she tries to portray herself as, you know, Susie Homemaker. You know, I was baking cookies and then I was so horrified by this thing that I had to become involved. But if you read about her, she's a hardcore publicist. I mean, she's been doing this for some really big companies for a long time.
Right, yeah, she worked for Monsanto. I think we've got the same situation here in North Carolina. The lady that ran me off of the meeting, the alleged, memorial service, political rally, I think she just said in some of her interviews, oh, I was woken up by Newtown. BS. That lady was, if not a board member, a heavily involved volunteer with North Carolinians Against Gun Violence, which is CSGV, States United to Prevent Gun Violence, is his local state chapter here. And she's abandoned ship on them because they ran out of money to the point where they stopped paying their executive director, and their executive director left. Their assistant director is running the show, and she's a moron.
Good.
Is she the woman who wrote that lovely book I gave you, Sean?
No, that was Gross.
Catherine, is it?
Name was Gross. Goss.
Goss.
Kristen Goss. That was Disarmed, the Missing Movement for Gun Control. Yeah, she is on the board, I believe, of NCGV, or was, and she's a professor at Duke University.
Okay, so this memorial service thing that
memorial service
where you show up at the and basically they told you it is a open to the public memorial service, right?
Kind of how I took it.
In a church, and
in a Catholic church.
They
in the sanctuary of the Catholic church, not like, you know, the education building, not out underneath the tree.
Yeah.
The sanctuary, in front of the altar, with people at the pulpit preaching.
And they basically called you out by name and said, you need to leave.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I didn't really intend to be there. I had been trying to get Grassroots North Carolina to sign off on taking 10 or 20 people there with signs. And it never worked out. There's other things going. It just wasn't something that was going to happen. Then I was going to go with Luke at Triangle Tactical. I was going to go shoot the day-night-day IDPA match. And then it was going to be 40 degrees and raining, and I'm like, I'm not that stupid. Well, I get an email about 8:30, 9:30 in the morning. Hey, Sean, what about this? And I knew about it. Obviously, I was going to, you know, set up a protest for it. But I'm like, well, you know, are you interested? She says, yeah, well, do we need signs? I'm like, man, just two of us. And I drive out there. I'm about halfway there. She emails me, like, I'm not going to go. I'm like, oh, great. So she's like, oh, by myself.
Nice.
Yes. Well, at least there's no crowd to have trouble controlling, right?
Yeah.
So I got there. I thought, well, I'm all by myself, standing on a street corner, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'll just go in. So I parked the car. I put my gun in the trunk because it seemed like the reasonable thing to do given the circumstances I was in. And I walk into the front door. I got 5 steps in the door, maybe, and this woman steps out, steps towards me, looks me straight in the face, and says, Sean, you're not welcome here. You need to leave.
Wow.
Because it, wait a minute.
Like,
it was.
Who are you?
Yeah. Are you the priest of the church? I don't think so.
Well, okay. And you know, you might not recognize. It might not be obvious reading the stuff that I write and you know, and seeing me on TV. But I'm not really that confrontational.
No.
You know, you've met me. I'm not really an in-your-face. Be a jerk to people. I come across kind of abrasive, but I mean, I don't. If you come and come after me, hey, I'm like, whoa, first thing I'm going to do is back up. Cause
well, I have met
other
you,
options.
And
you?
The only thing I can say about you is that you are an extrovert as opposed to an introvert. No,
yeah.
Seriously, you are a little bit more outgoing.
little.
A little, yeah, a little, and but it's not in a bad way. You're very almost you're upbeat about most everything. You know, you're enthusiastic and upbeat and friendly about most everything. It's not like you're confrontational in like kind of an aggressive way. I wouldn't say that at all.
Yeah, when a girl who's she was taller than you and maybe outweighed you a bit, but that's
everyone's
all I
taller
can say
than me.
She's, yeah, so we're not talking like, you know, some 6-foot
right.
Amazon woman jumped in my face and I ran away from her. I'm like, what am I going to do? Hit her? You can't
right.
be here. You're outside. I'm like, what? I'm like, who are you? I asked her very quietly. I went to leave and I turned around and come back. I said, who are you? And she said her name was Karen Haldeman. She does pronounce the 2 A's as Karen, not Karen.
Okay. That's very fancy.
With
go
a
ahead.
Name like Sean, I can't be criticizing anybody else's name, right?
Okay.
So, and I turned and went to leave, and there's a camera behind me from, I think it was WRAL. And I asked him, so you're the only, you know, coverage? And he said, yep. And I left. I walked out the door. I went to the car. And I see them come out the door and sort of watch me. I put my gun. No, actually, I'm not even sure I did. I think I might have left it in the trunk. And I got in the car, and I drove all the way down their parking lot. And you could see from the video, it was not merely, like, across the street 50 feet away. It was down a driveway, effectively, and then to the street and across the street on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So I was probably 100, 150 yards from their front door. And then I parked my car and I said, well, now what am I going to do? I'll just stand here. Because I drove it all this way. Let's see if I can get the media to talk to me.
Right.
Because what else are you going to do, right?
Right.
So I stood there and got cold and wet. So I got my umbrella and my jacket and put those on or you know, put the umbrella up and stood there and kind of sort of waved at people and pretty soon, you know, the meeting starts to break up, and I was counting cars as they were leaving because I was trying to estimate the number of people who were there. And I estimated it really was between 50 and 100. It wasn't microscopic, but it wasn't really huge either.
Right.
And all of a sudden, here comes the ABC car. He drives straight across the street, pulls in. He says, hey, you know, can we interview you? Sure. Yes, you can. He asked me a couple questions. I answer a couple questions. Mostly what I wanted to convey was, why are they punishing me for the acts of a madman?
Right.
But, you know, But what's really strange about it is the reaction that I got from some people, you know, on Twitter, on comments in some of the, you know, in the newspaper, and it was like, oh, you're like the Westboro Baptist Church. Who would?
Oh.
Because, you know, you're protesting a memorial service.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, it was
what,
a memorial service.
You know what, I wanted to
said,
ask.
You know, you don't.
What exactly was this memorial service? Was it in memory of Newtown, or?
Yeah, it was the one-year anniversary of Newtown, so, of course, naturally
okay,
they
but,
had to have a wine fest.
But there was no one there who actually was directly connected to Newtown, correct?
I would guess the answer to that is no, but since they hustled me out the door so quickly, I couldn't be for certain.
Right.
Now, none of the news coverage said this person is a parent of or, you know, had a child or a nephew or a great-grand second cousin.
Kind of makes you wonder why they decided to have a memorial service in North Carolina for something that happened in Connecticut.
I know.
Well,
it strikes me as so strange.
It was no
yeah,
more.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's written on all those pews that I saw in the news story was no more silence. And what they say, Sean, we don't want you here. We don't want you to talk.
Yeah. No more silence, Sean. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I can say that, right?
Oh, sure.
Sure can.
Yeah, we cuss a lot on this show.
Not me.
It's got an explicit tag on iTunes, so you're completely
Yeah,
safe.
I know. But, yeah, basically, the strategy is show up, have something to say, be nice to the reporters.
Right.
And it works pretty much every time. The Gabby Giffords one was really strange in that they showed up. Particularly the WRAL reporter, he kept saying, well, what's the problem? Why are you so upset that she's not talking with you? And I'm like, look at your press release. She's having a roundtable discussion with gun owners. Where are the gun owners? We're all standing out here. And we hammered him and hammered him and hammered him. And finally, he walked away from me thinking, what is this dude talking about? But the coverage that he gave, his video was so bad, so awful to Gabby Giffords and her crew, that they actually made WRAL take it down. They claimed, well, this little thing that you said was inaccurate.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They took it all down because, you know, they said some minor, tiny inaccuracy that mattered nothing at all to the whole story. But WRAL is the big dog in TV news, local news in this area.
Wow.
They didn't want that video still out there. NBC 17 made me out to look like the face of all gun owners everywhere because every time Gifford's husband said something, they cut to me saying something to contradict him. Boom, 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 smash.
Nice.
Like they made me the hero. I'm like, how did that happen?
Yeah, and that's a big takeaway from this is that this was really kind of a failed counter protest because you didn't get the numbers that you need because I mean we're way bigger than them, but it was just you. You know, you were immediately thrown out, not allowed to even, you know, even like witness what was going on in here. You can only see what was in the news, and as we know, we don't trust what's in the news. But at the same time, you got as much coverage as the, you know, 100 people that were in there. Is they pretty much gave you equal time.
Short of getting run over by a truck or struck by lightning, it couldn't have been worse for me. And yet still, they carried my message to the point that one of the videos that was taken, the headline that they posted was "Protester Gets Thrown Out."
Yep, that was actually tweeted by Joan Peterson, and that was how her tweet read.
You know, it's funny. It's kind of like the using their mojo against them, because how many times have we, you know, been at like the NRA convention where there's, you know, 70,000 people all, you know, being nice and polite and upholding guns and all that kind of stuff, and there's, you know, 50
right.
people standing outside. And the press is clustered around the protesters and completely ignoring the you know, the all these you know, tens of thousands of people. You're kind of doing the opposite of that because you're, you know.
That's exactly what you want to do is they are going to structure their news story. And it's very funny and kind of embarrassing. When they did the No More Names campaign and started reading the names, the reason that everybody was supposed to be there was to watch them read these names, right? So that the cameras rolled in, they videotaped a couple of bigwigs that were going to talk. They videoed the bigwigs talking. They videoed 3 minutes, maybe, of somebody reading names. They turned their backs on the protest, on them, and walked across the street and started videotaping us. And as soon as they were done with us, they left. So it was very, we knew this was going to happen. I mean, I told everybody before it happened, this is what's going to happen. Because that's how they structure their news gathering.
Well, you know, the camera guys don't care, right? The guy running the camera, he just wants his footage. He doesn't give a shit. He wants footage that can be cut back and forth for the, you know, 30-second spot on the evening news. Mm-hmm. The reporter doesn't give a shit about anything except getting enough information for the voiceover for that 30 seconds. That's all he cares about.
Right.
So
right.
They
and the cameraman's probably the most likely person on the street to actually be carrying a gun.
Yeah, all that's the dirty little secret of TV news is the camera guys are almost always armed.
They're carrying what, $10,000 worth of equipment on their shoulder?
Absolutely. And often in some really shitty parts of town. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I used to know a network camera guy. That's when I first learned that they almost all carry.
Now, see, in North Carolina, it's a protest. I can't have a firearm.
But they can.
That's why I was standing on the street corner with no gun, because that was the rule.
Yep.
So, here we are, MAIG on one side, us on the other side. And probably all those camera guys were armed because, you know, it's Moore Square in Raleigh and they have $10,000 cameras.
Yep. Wow. Well, if anybody wants to call in and with a question or anything, the number is 214-530-0036. I will try to add you in without screwing it up, but I can't make any promises. So...
paste, huh?
Yeah, the paste eaters.
It's interesting. They're some of the least self-reflective people I've ever met, in that they don't look at what has failed in the past and stop doing it. Of course,
right.
If they looked at everything that has failed in the past, they would just quit being anti-gun. But, you know, they don't even look at the tactics. Do the tactics not work? Oh, we're going to act like this has never been done before. We're going to try this bold new tactic that's been tried 75 times before and failed. But they're going to do it again because this time they have Bloomberg's money.
Oh, yeah. No, I just did a post this morning. It's been an easy one because I don't have as much time to blog, to do the big in-depth blog post that I've done because of the baby. But I've just been scrolling through Balder Odorson and Joan Peterson's Pinterest account and just grabbing interesting images off of them and reposting them and putting some rebuttals to them. And this morning I put one up of Balder has been constantly posting various reiterations of the Arthur Kellerman study. And it's it's an awful study. I mean, it's just terrible. It's just, they just simply just said, oh yeah, a gun owner is someone in possession of a gun. It does not matter if they legally own the gun or not. It doesn't matter if they're a salaryman or an engineer or a, you know, or a clerk at a grocery store or if they're a drug dealer. And all they're caring about is if someone's getting shot and killed. And it doesn't matter if it's a home invasion or someone defending their life or all of that. And then they kind of flowerly work it together so that you get these weird, you know, these weird sound bites that sound like, oh, you're more than likely to shoot your kid as they're going to the bathroom late at night than you are to kill an intruder, which is never even what even Kellerman dared to say.
Right.
And yet they keep saying it 15 years later.
Yeah, here's where we as gun owners fall down. We think that the truth matters. On which planet does the truth matter to the people who are doing their damnedest to take away our rights? The truth doesn't matter to them. they don't care about the facts. They have their opinions, and they're going to find the things that support them. If they cared about the truth, and if they told us the truth when they said that the intent was to cut down on violence, even gun violence, then they would not do the things they do. They're not interested in the truth. They've got their minds made up. They're just trying to do something. So we need to remember, while we are giving out the truth, while we are telling people where they can access actual studies that make real sense, that's for the people in the middle. That's for the people who are like, well, you know, I'm a college guy who doesn't know anything about guns, and I'm going to go with my friend and go shooting, and wow, maybe I'm going to find out some more about it and end up being a gun blogger and, you know, still not having the sense to move out of Massachusetts like you, weird.
yeah, I was going to say, you just described
what
weird.
Matters to them.
Dad, I was in Maine when that happened.
Oh, so it got worse. You started in Maine, and you moved to Massachusetts.
There's no work in Maine.
But that's the thing. That information is good for people like you. That is good for a lot of people in the middle. And we do, in a certain sense, we have to talk past the opponents in order to get to the people who do care about those truths. But we need to not make the mistake of believing that the people who are opposing us, who are actively trying to take our rights away, actually give a damn about the truth.
Do you ever feel bad about debating these people? I mean, there comes a point where, like, you're debating with, especially, like, people, anti-gun people online, and you're debating with them, and clearly, not only do they not care about the facts, but they're really dumb. And it feels, I mean, I've had these conversations with people, and it really feels like you're having a conversation with a three-year-old trying to explain to them certain things. And they're right. Stuck in their emotions.
They're trying to explain physics, and they're throwing two.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there comes a point where you kind of feel like, not only do you feel like it's pointless, but you kind of feel like you're kicking somebody while they're down. I mean, clearly we're winning. We're winning the argument because people realize that gun control doesn't work.
Right.
You know, but I mean, do you personally ever get the feeling? Because I have stopped having these conversations because I feel like it's pointless, and I feel like I'm being mean to a dumb person.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. There's people that are willfully stupid, and there's people that are just too dumb for words. The ones that are just too dumb, if I can identify them, I try to walk away from them. It really depends. You know, sometimes it's fun to mock people just for the entertainment value on Twitter.
Okay.
Which, if you followed my Twitter feed, you've seen me do on occasion, just mock somebody because, well, I had nothing better to do and they needed mocking.
Sean was bored.
And then there's other people who are just, you need to stick them. You need to pop them, you know. But you're right. If you get bogged down in arguing with people who are too dumb to understand, you know, 1 + 1 = 2, then you're kind of wasting your time.
But I mean, that's not. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the bigger debate. I mean, I personally make it a point that, you know, I'm not gonna burn a whole lot of calories arguing with just another nobody like myself. I'm always trading up. I'll discuss and debate stuff with just somebody I know personally and you know, put as much effort in as needed possibly. But when it comes to the actual, you know, the actual battlefields, when you're actually in the quote unquote war grounds where, you know, you're dealing with people that are funding a group and they're doing a protest and they actually are the type of person that can call up a senator and say, hey, I'd like to get this bill passed through and all of that. These people will not debate you under any circumstance. Mm-hmm. And so you don't really get a whole lot of, you know, how do you feel about debating these people? Because you don't debate them. They say, Sean, get the hell out of here.
Well, that's part of it. You have to remember who's your audience. You know, as being that I'm, you know, I'm getting myself on television, my audience is not necessarily Karen Haldeman.
Right.
Now, I want Karen Haldeman to grind her freaking teeth and pick things because headline was protester gets thrown out of Moms Demand Action thing. You know, or not, I don't think it had their name in the headline. So, I mean, oh, that's got to be horrible. I put weeks of effort into this. I get paid by Bloomberg to do this. At least I think she does. I'm almost certain she does. And what's the headline? Sean gets kicked out.
Nice.
And they carefully wrote down what I said. You know? That's got to piss her off. But the real audience is not her. The real audience is the guy sitting at home thinking, I must be the only person on the planet who thinks these people are stupid. Because one of the biggest problems that the average gun owner runs into is they think they're alone. And the internet has fixed that in a lot of ways. But when I grew up, when I was in Los Angeles, it was me and my brother and my dad, and we were the only people in Los Angeles County who owned guns. Because as far as we knew, nobody else had a gun. It wasn't a police officer or a criminal. So we thought there was nothing we could do. We thought nobody cared. We thought, you know, we can't scare the white people. You know, you heard that from the gun bloggers, don't scare the white people.
Oh, yeah.
People that say, well, we can't open carry. We'll scare everybody. We can't do this. We'll scare people. We have to be quiet. We have to shut it up. We have to censor ourselves. Oh, we have to do that because we don't want to scare people off. But the reality is there's a lot of people who feel the same way, and they don't say anything because they're self-censoring as well. So we're doing their job for them. We're doing the opposing side's job by shutting our mouths.
Yeah, it's almost like you're it's almost like the classic preference cascade situation. It's, you know, it's kind of like everybody kind of wakes up and looks around and goes, "Oh, I'm not the only one." Oh.
Yeah. It is. How can there not be way more gun owners than they possibly imagine if in 2 months they sold, what was it? How many 24 like 3 yeah. times the number of guns in the United States, just they had 3 times the number of NICS checks. That's way more than that, a number of guns were sold in 2 months, than there were total number of police officers in the entire United States. In 2 months, 24 million guns were, or excuse me, 2.4 million guns were sold.
Yeah.
This was like right after the re-election. December, January, or November, December, I can't remember. I think it was November, December. And there's only 800,000 police officers in the United States.
Yeah, and but, you know, Ruger's
it's just
still
you and me buying our fourth and fifth.
Yeah,
and fifth,
yeah, right? That's what it is.
You know, every person, every gun shop says, "Oh, I have a bunch of women coming in saying, I want a gun, and I got to carry concealed."
You know, that's
we got 375,000, 628, I think, concealed handgun permits in North Carolina as of October 1st.
Wow,
that's not you and me buying our seventh gun.
No.
Nope. And on top of that, I mean, it's the there's just recently been a suit filed against Massachusetts for the fact that the permitting system is getting the lag in the permitting system is getting illegally long. And that's in Massachusetts, that's not somebody buying their second gun or, oh, I've got a bunch of guns and I've had a bunch of guns forever, you know, and I'm going to get my carry permit. In Massachusetts, you need a permit to own a gun. And so now these are brand new gun owners. I mean, this is, mm-hmm. there are so many of them that they're completely choking the system.
Right. So keep that in mind. Anytime somebody tells you, I don't want to scare the people or we need to self-censor because they're arguing from the position of we're a small minority that we have to be careful or everybody will rebel against our craziness and take away what rights we have. That's not true. We're not a small minority. We're probably more than half the country.
Well, we have to get that half of the country active.
Yep.
And and voting in the right way.
Well, and that's actually that's the rationale behind the No More Silence is I mean, obviously they're not talking about, you know, fostering a debate because they avoid debate, and they're not talking about, you know, we need to speak out because they're telling Sean that he needs to shut the hell up. Is they are still buying into that, you know, that bullshit poll that's obviously wrong, because that's the only way it adds up. That says mm-hmm. that the vast majority of Americans say, oh, yeah, we need all these draconian gun laws. And so what they're saying is, all right, so we've got this huge base, but, you know, it's unquantifiable because we can't get, you know, we can't get a foothold anywhere. So
right.
our base needs to speak
up. Well, you know what?
That's the same thing with us.
Weird. You've got a daughter. If I polled 100 fathers who had daughters and said to them, in a perfect world, would you like your daughter to have a pony? I'd probably get 90% of them who would say, boy, I'd sure like my daughter to have a pony. And we get 10% of them who have actually seen ponies say, oh, hell no.
I'm one of those hell no's.
Yep.
And then you ask the same question again to these same 100 guys. Now, here is a pony. It's going to cost you $300 or $600 a month to stable it. Do you want the pony? And they're all going to, hell no. I want her to have it. I just don't want to pay for it. Same thing with, you know, do you want to have gun control? Oh, yeah, we should have background checks. Wait a minute. I got to go through a background check and pay $50 so I can loan my rifle to my friend so he can take the rifle and teach my wife how to shoot and still be committing multiple felonies every time he hands her the rifle? That's stupid. But that's
exactly what
law would have done.
I think there's an element of people who are not educated on you know, our rights. I think there's people who think that gun control does not apply to them. Gun control is for those people, you know, the bad people. I'm not a bad person. Gun control doesn't apply to me. I'm not doing anything wrong. But those people, maybe we need some gun control. And I think there's a lot of that.
Well, that's how it started.
There's also how many gun owners in America don't really consider themselves gun owners?
Right.
I mean, you know, up until recently, because I finally convinced him, I said, Dad, you can't have this thing just laying around anymore. Is my father is super duper liberal, and is absolutely a cheerleader for whatever bullshit liberal cause is going on. But yet he had guns in the house. They were old, beat up, you know, guns that he had from his childhood, but they were guns. It's one of those like, oh, no, I'm not one of these gun owners. Oh, yeah, I mean, I guess I've got an old 38 tucked in a closet somewhere, or I've got a shotgun stuck up in my attic.
Yeah, it doesn't apply to them.
And when the SWAT team comes and raids him by accident and he, you know, they throw him in jail for the guns that they find that aren't registered and, you know,
the arsenal in his attic.
Well, how did this law happen?
Yeah.
I think you're right, Breida, in that there are so many people who think, well, this doesn't apply to me. I wonder how much of it has to do with your and my view that a law is something that we should follow if it is at all possible for us to do so. And if the law is wrong, rather than just ignoring it, we should get it changed. Whereas a lot of the people who say, well, we need this law, we need that law, are quite comfortable with ignoring laws they don't like.
Well, that's the sordid history of gun control in the South. You know, the laws were passed, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and just not applied to the right people. They were only applied to those people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they didn't.
In fact, not only did they do that, they had an explicit judicial a decision where it actually was written in a Florida decision in court where it said these laws were never intended to be applied to white people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
hell, that's the North Carolina. You've got that pistol purchase permit, which that's still on the books, isn't it?
Yeah, we were unable to get that past the governor. He threatened to veto.
But the and of course, Sean, I'll let you as a North Carolina resident explain the origin of that pistol permit.
It's a Jim Crow law. $5 to get a pistol when a pistol costs $5.
Yep, and also I believe the it was specifically $5 was the average weekly income of a black freedman when the law was passed. And so it's one of those, you would have to dump a week's salary.
Worker's weight salary.
Yep. So you were you had to dump a week.
Double the cost of it.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
It was an NFA $200 on your $200 machine gun.
Yep. They did the exact same thing.
$5 pistol.
Yep.
And if you were stupid enough to show up and turn in the paperwork, the white sheriff would tell you to take your black ass out. I mean, you know, it sounds horrible for me to say it quite like that, but that's the reality
in
a lot of places in North Carolina.
Yep.
That was the reality.
Oh, it wasn't
so
just
they
North
had a
Carolina.
Choice, break the law and evade, you know, the pistol laws, and then be in a position where as soon as the police decided that they were a problem, they were going to get arrested for having, we never issued you this permit to buy a pistol. You know, it's not like there's now today there's, 100 million people, there's 9 million people living in the state. There's nearly a million living in Wake County. And we're talking, there's places that had a couple hundred people living in the county. Well, they knew every single person. You didn't get a pistol purchase permit. You've never lived anywhere else. You have a pistol. Clearly, you broke the law somehow. Off to jail with you.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. I've heard some really horrible things about the way it was in North Carolina, where, like, they had black deputy sheriffs, or they had black police officers. They were only allowed to arrest black people.
Huh. Talk about separate but equal.
Somebody was telling me about that. Yeah, there was a guy who was still, I think he still is. He's a maintenance worker at a local predominantly, historically black college. And he said when he was a child, there was one black police officer, and he was allowed to arrest any black people he wanted. If he caught a white person doing something, he could call for a white deputy to come get him.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Can you imagine that today?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Black police officer, but I'm white. You can't arrest me. After he gets done giving you, a hickory shampoo, then he's gonna go to the press and say, "You know what he said?"
Wow.
Wow.
Hey, we're about out of time. Thanks so much for calling in tonight,
yeah.
Sean. This was really great.
Hey, well, thank you.
And we'll try to get you back. I'm sure you'll do something to irritate the anti-gun folks. Again.
Why? We haven't discussed Pajama Boy yet.
That's
well,
right.
That's a good point.
We're going to go a little bit long for that.
All right.
Okay.
Well, if everybody's okay going long, we can go long because, good Lord, what a.
Oh. I thought it was The Onion. I swore to God when I saw that photo, I saw it on Hot Air. I could have sworn this was an onion bit, legitimate.
Seriously. How could that not be like a total? Somebody was goofing on him. You know, this is like beyond keg stand boys. You know, and the whore chicks. Hey, you know, we need to not worry about our insurance because we need to, get laid with this dude here.
It's almost like somebody in the White House is having a contest to see who can get the most ridiculous thing past the, and okayed into the public. You know, it's like, it's just bizarre.
It's like, wait a second. Did somebody like ask me to design them? The ad and go, Sean, we'll do whatever you say. Oh, I got one for you. A couple of guys, dude, doing a keg stand. No, wait, I got a guy. Put a guy in pajamas and his stupid glasses. He's going to talk to his mom when he should be out earning his own damn money.
Yeah.
They'll never go for that. Oh, my God, they did it.
Yeah, and the responses to it have been even better. I mean, it's you could not have asked for a more tone deaf and
Have you seen the gay one though?
Oh yeah, that's so much worse.
I haven't seen the gay one.
Oh,
someone post that in chat.
Oh my God! They're like, oh, it's like you're mad at them. You know, you're all like homophobic because I'm like, I didn't look at that dude and see gay dude, because all my gay friends would have kicked his ass. dude, put some freaking clothes on and stop acting like a 2-year-old in your parents' house.
Yeah.
And go get a job, right? And then they showed me Big Gay Alf, Big Gay Obamacare ad.
That's terrible. If I was gay, I would be so offended.
It was because there were several different ones. There's one with a guy dressed like a reindeer, and there's another one with a bunch of guys dancing around.
It's
like,
and they were almost dancing ironically, weren't they?
It kind of looked like it. It was like they were making fun of themselves or something. It was like what you would expect if a bunch of non-gay people were pretending to be gay for the purposes of the video. It's
of
like
course.
It was like a spoof of gayness.
Yes. Hey.
There was some subtlety there.
Where?
I don't know. I didn't see any subtlety.
Oh my god! It was.
Oh my god! I just googled it. What the?
Did you just watch it?
I haven't watched it yet, but wow! I mean, it's one of those.
Put the link. Put the link in the chat.
Yeah.
Oh please.
I'll add it to the post. It is really horrible.
I mean, these dudes are blowing candy canes.
Yeah.
I mean, this would piss off Dan Savage. Dan Savage is constantly ranting about, you know, take your sex out of Christmas.
Yeah.
And you got the little short guy dressed as an elf.
Yeah, with elf ears. Yeah.
That's offensive.
Oh, my God.
This is your tax dollars at work, people.
Yeah. So, I mean, so, you know, at yeah, least, that's least something they, to I think about think. Is that the tax dollars. They put a bunch of buff dudes in nut huggers and had them dance around.
You know, if they'd have acted just a little tiny bit more macho and, like, been playing for the camera instead of for each other, they could have totally sold that to women because, I mean, all the ladies have been like, ooh, they're pretty cute. But, oh, my God, you know, there was one guy wearing dog tags. Can't remember what the other dude was wearing. There was a couple of like coded things in there. The one dude wearing dog tags. Oh look, he's gay military.
Yeah, and there's
one guy's got a deer stalker hat. So obviously he must
gay
be a gun owner.
Yeah,
I don't know, but it's just this is like Obama going to Pixar and saying that, you know, he can tell just by looking which people are illegal immigrants.
Or is this like the modern version of the YMCA guys?
Yeah,
got the dog
oh, God,
tags.
No.
These
and
guys couldn't
hunter.
Touch the YMCA guys.
Yeah, the YMCA guys had some talent.
The YMCA guys would have kicked all four of his asses.
they're trying for a diverse selection of gay guys, I think.
Well, and you know what's even funnier is the
this, have they never met any? Where's the big fat hairy one?
There's no bears.
Where's
the bears?
They're getting so desperate now that they're even resorted to putting out position papers saying that, oh, we can't repeal Obamacare because it would cost so much money.
Yeah, sorry we destroyed your country, but it costs too much to put it back together. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I still love the fact that they've switched over. They don't call it Obamacare. They call it the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, yeah.
These people are realizing that they've got to pay, like, you know, $2,000 a month for essentially something that's not going to ever cover them.
Yeah, it's affordable the way a cut is a decrease in the amount of increase or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's affordable the same way a brick flies.
Oh, I guess the other thing I had on the topic list was the Colorado deal.
What?
The
school shooting.
The school shooting where
don't you just want to find that school resource officer and give him a big hug, say thank you.
Yeah, I mean, what happened was, in case anybody's been hiding under a brick, there was a high school in Colorado. Somebody went in and decided to do the classic, you know, shoot up the school. Except that there was somebody with a gun there already. I don't think anybody died. I think they there was a couple of people wounded. I think the only
one girl was wounded, yeah. And I think she's going to make it.
Yeah, went critically wounded.
Very seriously injured.
And the other guy, the guy wound up shooting himself, which is pretty much par for the course on these things. You know, it's like the minute somebody shows up to offer them any kind of...
The cop didn't even discharge his weapon.
Yeah, he just stood there, and the guy, but that's what happens with these things.
As far as I can tell by the reading of it, he didn't actually show himself. He was around the corner and identified himself as a sheriff's deputy, told him to throw down his gun, and he was, I guess, planning on charging in there and shooting if it didn't happen. I don't know what he was thinking he was going to do. Obviously, he was badass enough to get there, but I don't believe he held the guy at gunpoint at all.
Well, unfortunately, we got to also point out, he wasn't also badass, but he was also extremely lucky that it was like 80 seconds from the first disturbance to when the guy offed himself. And it's one of those, like, I don't know about this high school, but I know my high school, if you were in one of the further sections, it would take you at least 2 minutes if you were running full out and you didn't have a duty belt on to get to the, you know, to get to another side of the school. It's just dumb luck. And it's another reason why this whole gun-free zone thing is just bullshit.
And this proves the fallacy of the gun-free zone. You know, it's not the gun-free zone, obviously, doesn't keep anybody safe, but somebody with a gun there does.
But can you believe Wayne LaPierre saying the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun? How tone deaf.
Yep. Yeah, did you catch the part where it said that not only did that school resource officer go, but there was an unarmed security officer and two school administrators went with him? So not only the guy with the gun, but there were three more people who were apparently planning on throwing their bodies on top of that mess in order to keep it from getting worse. So why do they, you know, why do they get armed with harsh language?
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, that,
they got,
I mean,
the balls
that's
to, a... to run in on that. Give them a gun.
Yep. Yeah, that's about all you can say on that. I mean, it's a textbook case of, or it should be a textbook case of the failure of the gun-free zone and the optimal fix for it.
And I mean, also, I mean, the bottom line is, if you get rid of the gun-free zone status, I mean, it's not like this is happening in, you know, in public parks and shopping malls that aren't posted. And I mean, every place you ever hear about this is always posted no guns.
Well, sure.
And it's intentionally done. I mean, the Aurora guy drove past at least one theater. I don't remember the actual full report, but he did not pick the theater closest to his home. He picked a theater that was much further away because that one was posted.
Not only did he pick one farther from his home than the closest one, he picked one that wasn't the biggest one in the area either, which would have made it easier to kill more people. So he passed ones that were both closer and bigger, and closer and bigger.
Yep.
To go to the one, for no apparent reason, went to this one for reasons we couldn't possibly imagine. It couldn't have anything to do with that sign.
Yeah.
Yep. And I mean, it's just one of those, like, it's one of those, like, you don't even need to, like, game out the, because you can game out the scenarios and, you know, no, you know, if the janitor's got a concealed gun, or, you know, you got to hope that, you know, a parent's picking up their kid and they're carrying a gun. And no. If you get rid of the gun-free zone system, they will not choose that as a venue for what to do, because, again, this is prime example. They want to play God. They want to have the video game set on God mode, where, oh no, there's nothing anybody can do to me. I am going to be the biggest, baddest motherfucker in this entire area, and I can barricade the doors, and I can, you know, and I can control the way in and the way out, and I will be able to kill anybody and everything, whether they be teachers or students or whatever. And then by the time the police show up, well, then I've done what I need to do, and I can shoot myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, you said that, well, this proves the fallacy of the gun-free zone. Here's the problem. That's not what we're arguing against. We're not arguing against people who honestly believe that if we just put up a sign that nothing bad will happen. What we're arguing against is people who believe that it is somehow immoral for you as a human being, non-uniformed, non-government employee, to plan ahead for the circumstances in which you are going to have to kill somebody. That makes that you are morally a bad person for making a decision now for a circumstance that isn't immediate for some future date to kill somebody.
Well, then I am one rotten, immoral bastard.
Yeah.
Because I plan on that a lot.
That's why we're not getting anywhere with it. But we're not arguing over our gun laws good or bad. We're not arguing over our self-defense laws good or bad. The real argument that we are having, that we are not forcing them to address because they will lose, and they're avoiding because they don't want to address it either, is that the question is do we as non-state actors have a moral right? Do we have a moral duty, a moral anything? Do we have a claim on our own lives that is so strong that we can end the lives of anyone who attempts to take that life from us unlawfully?
Well, you
and
have
their answer is and must be no.
You actually have two sides of that same coin. You know, on the one side, you have the people that for whatever reason believe that is the case, as a matter of philosophy. The other side of the coin are the people that believe it cynically because they know that criminals are not a threat to their state power, but an armed individual that's capable of defending themselves is a threat to the state power.
Well, that's why I get such a huge laugh out of armed liberals, because they have no idea that they're not as liberal as they think anymore. The minute they plan ahead to take care of their own security, they have left the plantation. It's all over but the crying at that point. They're eventually going to realize that their views are not as liberal as they think they are. They're taking responsibility for themselves. What other parts of their life are they going to start taking responsibility for?
Yeah, and then there's another angle to it, which is that these quote unquote whatever vilified gun they're talking about is only made to kill. And the previous response that we've done in the past, which is not very effective, is talking about, I use my AR-15 for NRA high power match, or I've got an AR-15 in 6.8 or 300 blackout that I use for deer hunting, or I hunt prairie dogs, or I participate in an IPSC match or an IDPA match, and I use a Glock 19 or what have you. Saying that, suddenly start talking about the sporting purposes, and I just turn around and go, no, these guns are made for killing, and that's exactly the reason why we have them, because killing is legal in self-defense situations. Killing another human being is 100% legal, is 100% justified. And then furthermore, step outside the whole gun issue. There isn't a country on the planet that does not say that, yes, if someone's doing some sort of horrible, egregious crime, you absolutely can kill them and not get legal recourse. And the people that are saying, oh, no, we can't have these things for killing, and we can't acknowledge, killing in self-defense. This is a human thing. They are not human. They're going against humanity. Humanity says,
oh, I'm concerned. You're right.
Yeah.
No, I don't carry a gun to make myself bigger or bad or anything like that. I carry a gun in case I meet somebody who needs to get shot.
Yep. Well, if you look
and
at
you know what? They'll identify themselves if they need it.
It is a iron law of nature. People, the liberals like to pretend that people are not animals. They believe in this perfectibility of man bullshit. But
man in the state of nature,
people,
is a noble savage.
People are animals. And if you look at animals, an animal will defend itself. And it'll defend itself by any means necessary. Animals kill other animals. Animals, it is life. Life kills, and that's the way things are. humans, you know, add a element of civilization on top of that, you know, raw nature thing. But, you know, somebody that can stand up and say that, oh, you should, nobody should kill to defend themselves. That's just wrong. Those people are so cocooned in a blanket of unreality that they're completely divorced from, you know, the natural order of the universe.
Well, I've been told, and I think this makes a lot of sense, that basically every political argument everywhere comes down to the argument between Rousseau and John Locke.
Right.
Man in the state of nature is perfect, a noble savage, and we can make man better from what it is now back to its noble savage state, or the other one who says, no, nah, man's a fallible creature. Man's evil. Man will do stupid crap. So yep. We need to make sure that we don't concentrate too much power in any one person's hand, because we'll eventually get one who's a douche.
Yep. No, it's not eventually. It's like guaranteed.
Well, think about it. If you know,
douches are attracted to power.
If you're walking down the street and you randomly picked 10 people to be emperor for life, you know, you're going to be. You know, there's always the possibility that you'll get, you know, some fairly decent people to do the job. But if the job has to be competed for, who's going to do the worst things in order to get the job?
Yeah.
The people who are evil, rotten, nasty people are going to slaughter others in order to get that power.
Yep. Politicians.
And what, are they going to suddenly change their spots when they get there?
Nope.
You know, nice guys like me are not going to be, you know, fighting and killing people to get to be emperor of the world. No matter how great my platform would be, I'm going to end up dead because some psychopath's going to kill me.
Ain't going to happen.
And how many times do you hear about, like, people that talk about being the emperor of the world? You know, oh, if I had absolute power. How quickly do their fantasies degenerate into putting the wrong people, you know, the quote unquote bad people into boxcars?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, who said it? Was it James Lilac said that every time you worry about all those people who want to make the perfect world, because they eventually get frustrated and start setting up guillotines in the public square in order to hasten the process.
Yep. Well. We are really, really over. So let's wrap it up. And thanks again, Sean, for being on. Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Everybody for listening. We will not be here next week, but we will be, I think we'll be back on the 2nd, if everybody's willing.
I'm there.
I don't want to go 2 weeks without a show, but
I think that's
good. We'll plan on a post-New Year. We'll ring in the New Year a day late.
Yeah, we're taking the holidays off.
Yep.
Let's just say
I'll still have some booze left over.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy New Year, and stay safe.
Aww. See you in 2014.
That's right. See y'all next year.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Bye.